History doesn't repeat itself, but it does echo.
Ah, there's a line I'm going to use. Can't wait for my next cocktail party. I'm going to call that out amongst the Lonnies.
But you know, sometimes it doesn't. It depends which echo you are listening to. Mark, hi, good morning.
Hearty good morning to you on the eve of Heritage Day. I had to get Heritage permission to put a skylight in a roof, and it's taken nearly a year, but it looks like I've got it. So we are preserving things. And you know, I was in the small town of Stanford this weekend where they replicated the award-winning flower show from the Chelsea Flower Show.
Okay.
And there's a little village which seems to be cooking with gas, as they say, but still able to retain its sort of heritage rules and keep everything looking oldie-worldy and fabulous. And so there's a place for it. Eh? There's a place for preservation. Eh? Or should we just leave the past behind? Should we get rid of all the old stuff? And I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'm very sort of touched by all of the past. I wrote this week about, you know, how there's all of those sonoria statements about history, about how, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does echo.
Ah, there's a line I'm going to use. History echoes.
You don't learn from history, then you're doomed to repeat it.
Can't wait for my next cocktail party. I'm going to call that out amongst the Lonnies. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, sometimes, you know, quite a lot of the time, it depends which echo you are listening to. So, you know, the idea that you learn from history, or at least you learn something from history, you know, sometimes you learn exactly the wrong thing.
Yeah, well, we have much history, I guess, that we'd rather forget, but also need to remember.
Okay,
that's the conundrum, in a way. Well, that's the paradox. I mean, I remember, if I'm not quoting him incorrectly, I think Winston Churchill, no less, once said that history teaches us that history teaches us nothing.
There is.
Okay. But it is, I guess, if nothing else, good to have a thing like Heritage Day to pause. I think we need more pauses in our life, right? Pause and reflect. What do you think?
I mean, I like the idea that Heritage Day has been subsumed by South Africans and turned into National Braai Day.
National Braai Day. Now, there's the place.
I'm quite happy for that to happen too.
No Connors Braai.
All right. So we don't talk about the weather on this program.
But no, there are exceptions to every bloody rule.
Okay. There are exceptions to every rule.
Imagine what it must be like to have been stuck on the N3 in your car with the snow pouring down and you ain't going nowhere. Now, what do you do? You can't keep your car running because you'll run out of petrol, okay? You can't turn around and go back because the snow didn't just fall in front of you. It's also now behind you.
Yes, exactly.
And so I believe people were stuck for like 8 hours sitting in their car.
Yep.
And the only thing I can say about that is, you better get on well with your family. Okay, that's for me, because if you're stuck, or your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever it is, because if you're stuck and it's freezing, then you better, and you can't listen to even the CD.
There is.
It was hectic, eh?
No, exactly. And you have to sort of start rationing your phone recharging. And then you spend your entire time.
Not to mention food. mention a few primary needs.
Oh, God, no. I feel for the orthodox people. I mean, South Africa is a very benign country from a kind of weather point of view. We don't have a lot of earthquakes.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of temperatures are really, really good. But it is kind of shocking, more shocking to us, when something really out of the ordinary happens, as happened over the weekend. There was, you know, thousands of cars stuck in the snow.
Another area we're not allowed to mention is sport. And after this last weekend's performances, that's just as well. I'm going to leave it there.
Okay. yes. All right, let's move on to more positive things in that case. You know what caught my eye this past week was big diamonds. Are you in favor of big diamonds?
Big diamonds?
Yeah.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
So you are pro a big diamond.
I'm not sure about the role of a diamond, I mean, in that context anymore. In fact, I think less and less people are coughing up for big diamonds. Eh? I mean, as an engagement thing. I mean, nowadays, wedding rings are made of very different substances and they're not I don't know. You tell me. I mean, a big diamond. I can tell you a fabulous story about a big diamond. Okay. The Star of Africa.
Yes.
The one that's in the British Crown.
Yes.
Okay. That huge big diamond. Now, you'll be surprised to know how that got from South Africa to London. And I'll tell you. Okay. Shall I tell you too?
Please, go ahead.
Since you're on big dive. Yeah. So they created a box, a big box with bolts and chains and things on it, and two armed guards. And there they did, got with this box onto the ship
right. And
set sail for England.
Okay? Right.
Supposedly delivering this diamond.
Right.
In the meantime, guess what they did to get it there? They put it in the post. That's a true story.
Well, that's amazing.
Now, I don't want to go back there either. Okay, but that's a true story. That's how the Star of Africa got into. But I would not risk posting it back to us if we ever wanted it. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about big diamonds.
Yeah. Now, the reason it's a topic is because last week, a diamond mine in Botswana called Dukhara found its second enormous diamond. So now 15 of the 23 largest diamonds that have been unearthed over the past decade have been found in this one mine.
Yeah.
It is a real kind of thumper. So the previous big diamond was just smaller than the diamond that you're talking about, the Cullinan diamond.
Yeah.
And this one is smaller still, but still huge. But, you know, the interesting thing is that apparently the technology involved in finding diamonds has got to be extraordinarily good. And because of that, we are finding more large diamonds are being found, and the efficiency, you could say, of diamond mines has been improving. And because of that, you know, that's actually bad news for the diamond industry.
Yeah, the better you get at finding diamonds, the less rare they become. So that's good.
It's a double-edged sword. Anyway, so De Beers, you know, their sales have been decreasing, and it was very notable in the failed bid eventually for Anglo by BHP that they said very distinctly that they would examine the position of De Beers, and Anglo has since announced that they're going to hive out De Beers. So, you know, the diamond industry is a bit of a tough industry at the moment because of improved technology.
It's real value. But the discussion around gold, although gold has got many other uses, I suppose. But I mean, diamonds, it's just because they're, you know, like the song goes, they just are forever. They're the hardest substance, I think, around, and they don't wear. And so they've got industrial uses for cutting things and doing all sorts of things like that. And it's their rarity that is their value. So be careful how good you get at finding them.
And
it's going to be a bit like oil, you know. So oil, you get gifted oil, okay? You're drilling one day, you're hoping to plant a whole new field of carrots. To, you know, I'm getting the bridge between diamonds and oil here, okay?
So carry on.
And next minute, this black stuff comes spurting out of the ground and you realize that you found oil. And the trick with oil is not to go and find it, but to limit it, to have a tap, which, you know, messes with supply and demand to get the price right. So all that you do if you've got oil is decide how fast to let it out.
Yes.
Okay, that's all you have to do, okay? Talking about what I call the popularity pendulum.
Yes.
Okay. If you go and look at what's happening in Europe and all these fabulous places where there aren't wars and aren't this and aren't that, people are flocking towards the beach to go and lie around in the sun and try and forget about the cares of the world, and even in places like Bali and so on, and it's becoming a problem.
Yeah.
There's no space on the beach, okay? And so, I mean, even our stemigration in South Africa is, I guess, making Cape Town, A, expensive, and B, clogged up.
Yeah.
You know, the traffic in Cape Town is a non-trivial issue anymore.
Hey? Yeah.
And I imagine the infrastructure that underpins its vast population growth and expansion is also something that has to be. So, supply and demand, eh? That's the basic.
Yeah, and applies everywhere. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, this year, we've seen a completely new phenomenon, which is anti-tourism protests. You know, not only...
Anti-tourism,
they started in Spain, but now, you know, they're everywhere. Obviously, Venice has had this problem for years and years and years. But also in Greece, you know, it's just, people are just over it. It's just completely overwhelmed the towns, and you know, you don't want to destroy the goose that's laying the golden egg or whatever, but at the same time it is kind of hard for people who live in these places and to love
them. If you get invaded by a bunch of soccer hooligans on a weekend, it does kind of change your friendly down the road pub a bit, you know.
But you know, you write about Cape Town. I mean, I lived in Cape Town for a long time. And I go back occasionally. And it's interesting when you go back to a place, you know, with time lags, because you remember it the way it was, right? And then you experience it the way it is. And it is just amazing how many more traffic jams there are in Cape Town and how much longer they take to clear than I remember way back then.
The solution, of course, Joburg is in the middle of a circle. You know, you can approach Joburg from 360 degrees. This is not true for Cape Town. Cape Town is about two-thirds surrounded by sea, okay? Yeah. And so there's only one or two ways in and out of Cape Town, and everyone uses them. So anyway, but one of the reasons the Cape Town's popular is because Cape Town works better than other places, you know? And municipalities, it seems to me generally, are being discovered one by one as being in serious financial difficulty and under disgraceful management, you know, and I say that, you know, just illuminated by what it seems to be, we've got an increased discovery of these things that seem to have lurked below the surface for some time now. And, you know, we're stopping more drug mules at the airport. Extortion has come to the fore, and you know, the business forums and the construction mafia, these things are almost a way of life. That's a terrible, terrible situation to find ourselves in. But maybe we've just become aware of them because we're doing something about them. So I'd like to see it in that positive light. But in my uninformed view, and I've never let being uninformed get in my way of expressing opinions.
I'm the journalist here, you know.
Well, that's your stock in trade, right?
So, yeah.
I mean, my uninformed view says, I would reckon, I mean, if you look at the number of municipalities that didn't get clean audits, blah, 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 I would reckon that putting about half of our country's municipalities under administration might be the bridge we need to build to cross over into a control, alternate, delete, management restart.
No,
is it even vaguely possible to cure that bag of rotten apples in any reasonable, affordable time frame, Tim?
I mean, you know what I find is incredible is, and this happens in so many government institutions and municipalities too, where somebody just decides not to pay a bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just incredible. And then, you know, 2 years later, you discover that such and such a municipality hasn't paid their ESCOM bill for 4 years. But, you know, 4 years ago, somebody actually made the decision not to pay. There's an invoice sitting on somebody's desk. And they didn't pay it. And that is just shocking because it just, you know, it accumulates because then the debt just moves up the chain. And then all of a sudden, you know, the service can't be provided. So, you know, the time to jump in is, you know, 25 seconds after the bill is not paid, you know, not 4 years later, just by the way.
Yeah, but it takes two to tango, eh? So the bill wasn't paid, but the service was continued. Yes. That's the other side of that equation.
Yeah.
Okay, because it used to be that a utility or even a telco, okay,
yes,
had this extraordinary power. That's why you could invest in them. That's why Eskom raised capital at some point at a lower cost of capital than the government when they issued Eskom bonds,
right,
because they had predictable cash flows and they had mechanisms to ensure that people paid, which was, we'll cut you off. Okay, right. When you start messing with that equation,
yes,
you start increasing the cost of capital and eventually it eats itself up and it's no longer a utility. It's a series of favors. And I can tell you, Tim, when you start a discussion that brings to the table favors, get out of the room. Okay, because favors always require reciprocal favors. Always and without exception. Never seek to be in the company of favor providers. I'm going to write about that. Anyway, but I mean, I think you need another kind of force, and let's call it administration. You put this municipality under the, and it's not, by the way, business rescue or liquidation. Those things have their place, obviously, but they have their place only when there's common interest in the survival or death of the patient. Okay, not when there's, you know, when there's a rejigging that's required, because BRPs don't run businesses. They're doctors, not bodies. These analogies or these metaphors are getting a bit lost. But we need a rethink completely on all of that.
I mean, there's two possibilities here. Because, you know, these municipalities that didn't pay their electricity bills, right? They continue charging because, you know, municipalities take a cut from the electricity. Or, you know, they make a premium. So now they continue charging their constituents So my question is this. There's two possibilities here. One, they had extra money that they frittered away. So what did they fritter it away on? Or alternatively, they didn't have extra money. There was, you know, a payment, a genuine payment crisis. And the municipality actually wasn't in a position to pay the bill because they just didn't have an economic base strong enough in order to make that happen. And those two situations, they, you know, they're extremes on a spectrum, right? But those two situations require very different solutions. The solution in the case of the municipality that's frittering away its money and still charging its customers, but not passing on its, is different from the situation where the municipality actually can't, you know, it doesn't have enough, you know.
You know what worries me?
Yeah.
Is when you start bringing logic into this discussion. No. Okay. That's when I'll lose all hope. Okay. What is he doing? I mean, he's making logical assessments and drawing logical conclusions. Which planet is this oak on? Okay, now, because here's the real, some of the causes are just fall into the very simple category, don't know, don't care. Okay, I say that with a bit of a, you know, tongue in cheek, but I really think there's a huge pervasiveness of don't know.
Yes.
Okay, don't know. I mean, don't know what the budget is, don't know what that can buy, don't know the value of money, all that kind of stuff. And so,
yes.
And why don't you know? Well, because you're not qualified for the job. That's not a popularity is the currency of employment, not capability. And until we change that dynamic or change, you know, how we utilize, you know, the numbers, we're going to find forever that this situation persists. And we've got to just say about it because it can only last for so long. And then you have, you know, multiple organ failure.
Yep.
You know, most people in the world just ultimately die, not from some very specific disease or some very specific diagnosis, but just they fall to pieces. Okay. They're multiple organ failure. This drops and then that fails and this and then they drop dead. Okay. And so I think that's probably the major cause of death. And that will be the cause of death because just incrementally, you just start dying as a country, as a municipality, as a province, you know.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
Man, thank goodness there's sun outside. Oh, can't mention the weather. Okay, can you get a bit more? I tell you what I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
I read the other day that the UK has closed its last coal-fired power station. That's it. No more coal-fired power stations in the United Kingdom.
Right.
Okay, and I went, that's what I did. And I'll say it again. I went, what the? And then I go, okay. It's clear to everyone on the planet for you know, reasons of contamination and all of those kinds of good things and clean air and clean energy, that coal fire. But what happens if your major strength is that you've got lots and lots of coal? Okay.
Yes.
And, you know, and that you've got no capital for others. Because I'll tell you where the clever money is.
Right.
The clever money, and when I say the clever money, I'm using that in inverted commas. The merchant banks, the JP Morgans and Goldman Sachs of this world are pouring their cash into nuclear power. And they are predicting that the size of nuclear power in the equation will be 3 times what it is today by 2050. I want to tell you that what happens in 2050 doesn't worry me nearly as much as what's going to happen in 2025. Now, what do you do? What are we going to do with our installed base?
Yes.
How are we going to transition from that to the new world? And who's going to fund it? Tim, I presume what these answers, because you know.
No, because I'm the logical one.
You're a journalist. Yeah, so tell me.
I live in, you know, the middle of a desert, and I power my house with solar power, and I've been doing it now for 14 years, long before it was fashionable. It has been, you know, just a joy. It's much simpler. The voltages involved are very small. Solar panels have no moving parts. They you know, work like a charm. The solar panels that I put in 14 years ago are still working.
Okay, but you don't manufacture steel, okay? And you don't have to get furnaces going.
Yeah, but you just put more, if you wanted to use that whole system, furnace burning steel, you know, you just put in more solar panels. You know, you put in a lot.
Cover
25 square kilometers with solar panels. Trust me, you'll have enough power to do anything you want. And can I just say, so the question is, what is the levelized cost of new electricity? And the answer to that is, I'm sad to say, solar and wind. And they are now, they overtook nuclear, you know, years ago, a decade ago. They are now, you know, a fifth of the price of power plants.
Okay. I agree with you. So I agree with you, but here's the big but.
Yes. Yes.
And this has been the downfall of many a business. Forget about governments.
Yeah.
When you've got a legacy system to protect because you haven't fully extracted, you know, the net present value of it, then it's very difficult to ditch that and move on. You know, and if you look at the failure of IBM relative to Apple, if you look at the failure of Kodak relative to digitized, you know, photography, if you look at all of the people that clung on to dated sort of technology, they failed. They went bankrupt. And so if we cling on to all we've got, so to speak, we're gonna inevitably go the same route. But it takes quite a lot of bravery and sense and logic and stuff to repurpose all of the people involved and all of that stuff. So I think we've got to change by sort of creep, as it were, and this private sector sort of leading that change out of desperation. But I don't see it, and I might be wrong, as a government-led strategy to move away from coal-fired power stations.
I know, it's a terrible thing. I mean, it's a terrible thing to have what was, you know, a natural advantage, you know, a sort of God-given strategic advantage, and for somebody to come along and take that strategic advantage away. I mean, it's very unfair.
No, I mean, come on, man. Something's horrible to us. Yeah.
But, you know, that's life.
Something's mean.
There's other things to do. And like brine, we can bribe. We can consider
we can bribe.
We can always bribe.
Well, enjoy the day, peoples, and we'll see you next week.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao.